They say the world can be hard, cruel, and ugly. Trust me, it gets worse if your hunger and thirst doesn't push you from position last place to first. Can't build a foundation without having feet in the dirt. So I put in the work, grind harder than most. I don't chase accolades of the living, I'm facing a ghost. That's what makes me the GOAT. Depending on who you ask, my brother, whatever task, got it covered like a mask. Guaranteed they can't see me at the open run, cause I cook competitors until they look well done. Don't act like you don't know where I hail from. I had to climb up out the trenches, sit on benches till my time had come. Don't be mad at the player, be mad at the game. Sneak dissing and hating, that's a flag on the play. Me falling off, huh, that'll be the day. I'm like Bolt in the race, leave the track flambé. It's the open run.
Never in the history of my entire life have I ever seen that before, Gaga. That's my young man Beast talking to me. He was all of 48 months. I hate parents who, I shouldn't say hate. I greatly dislike people who after, say, the age of 24 months, refer to their kids by and their age with months. Well, my son is 108 months now. But my boy was just a wee lad when he said that. He was all of 4. Never in the history of my life. That was rich. But then he made me think about what he was and why he'd said something like that. And for some odd reason, and I'm always reminded of something and The Wire at the same time. The greatest show, air, writ, or spit, is not subject to debate with me. Where Lester Freeman, one of the most underrated characters on the show, he had bars. And you'll hear a couple of those throughout the show today. He said, we're building something here. We're building it from scratch. And all the pieces matter. All of them. That time with my son mattered. This day matters. Everything I'm doing today matters. Good, bad, or indifferent, it all matters. And it got me to thinking about when I was a kid, a little bit older than my son. I used to have to babysit my younger siblings. My parents would be gone. Work. Whatever the case might be. And I'd be afraid sometimes. It's hard for me to admit, but I'd be afraid sometimes. So I'd read the Bible like a book, like my father, blessed dad, told me to. Not to read it like a holy book, but I thought of it like it's the Bible. It says the Holy Bible on the outside of it. So I would sit out on the stoop and read like it was going to save me. I kid you not. I thought it was going to save me from anything bad happening to me and my brothers and sister at the time. And I don't want to go into a deep dive about just the genesis, because that's what we're talking about, the history of a thing. But you don't have to go that far to start to question what you're reading, because he told me to read it like a regular book. Don't read it like a holy book, just read it. I started to see the differences in this thing called free will and common sense in what people choose to believe. My father told me to question everything. And if something is said to you, something you read, something you see, doesn't make sense to you, doesn't make sense here in your head or here in your heart, or here in your stomach, as he would point, then you have the right to question the answers. Question everything. As much as I am your guide right now, and possibly, you know, depending upon how you look at me, like I talked about my mother last week, my God, not everything I say is right. It's not the gospel. It's just to give you an idea of what you can work with and go from, and you can question that too, respectfully, of course. It's my father. He didn't play them type of reindeer games. And before I go any further, I'd like to welcome you to The Open Run with Will Strickland. That would be me. The Open Run with Will Strickland is brought to you by the fine folks at Press. We are press.net. I can be found across these rough interweb streets at W_Strickland and the number one on Twitter, Will Strickland and the number one on IG, and across all streaming platforms where podcasts can be found. Something else that didn't make sense to me and still doesn't is Brittany Griner and the WNBA season launched on May 6th. Great weekend of basketball just passed us. Brittany Griner was not a part of it. For all the BG 42 decals on every floor in every WNBA arena, she's still not here. The U.S. State Department has reclassified her as being wrongfully detained in Russia. I guess it sounds good for television fodder and for politicians looking to make a name for themselves by helping to free Brittany Griner. But Russia's going to make her go through the process. No matter what they're saying, because she's supposed to go to an arraignment, some sort of court date, on the 16th or 19th of May. Nancy Pelosi was over there in Ukraine, speaking to Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. And I asked this last week, what else is on her mission plate? Are they going to get Brittany out of here? I'm sure Britney doesn't give a damn whether it's for political gain or people are trying to utilize her and leverage her as capital for whatever their aspirations are. I'm sure she just wants to come home. But as Russia sinks further and further into this war with Ukraine, it's not even a war, it's this invasion of Ukraine. For many WNBA players who supplement their income, I can't even call it supplemental income. They make way more in Russia than they do in the WNBA. Those who augment, I guess. Is that a better word? I don't know. It's probably the same thing. At any rate, who make a great deal of their money playing basketball in Europe, in Eastern Europe in particular, in Asia. Russia's a big place for the top stars of WNBA, and Brittany Griner's no different. She's making well over $1 million over there. But what happens when they don't go back at the end of this WNBA season? When they can't? When they become accustomed to the million-plus dollars that Breonna Stewart's and the Brittany Griner's and such can command playing overseas because of this aggression in Ukraine. If they decide to go and sign somewhere else because does this war, does this aggression, does this invasion make their contracts with the Russian clubs that they play with and play for null and void? Whether it be breaches of contract, whether it be lawsuits, somebody's going to think about that later on. But I asked the question because I thought about it, like, what are they going to do when the season is over? A new champion is crowned and they have to go and find other work in the sport and vocation which they've chosen. And they shouldn't have to be like, oh yeah, I got to go work at 7-Eleven. Nothing against 7-Eleven. Just they want to play basketball for as long as they can play. You have a limited time to play professional basketball at the highest levels. They want to maximize. I understand it. Life is like that too. You ask questions about, and you worry about things that haven't come yet. Things you need to do. Sometimes you do. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm old at this point. Fifth flow old. And people say you figure it out as you go along. Some people do. What about those that don't? What do you do? I know that I want to make amends for the things I've done wrong. I want to embrace the things that I have done right, accentuate my strengths, and rid myself of my weaknesses, or at least lessen them, and move forward with positivity and love and light and whatever I choose to do, the next chapters that I write. I can't blame anything, but I know I come from a place where few make it out, no matter what they do. And it's sad. It's like a labyrinth. It reminds me of Passengers from De La Soul. And the song Stakes is High, where he says, I come from a place where needles and skin connect. No wonder where we live is called the projects. It is an experiment. Sad, but true. Rest in power shouts to 2014 NBA first round draft pick Adrian Payne, Michigan State star of the 2014 NCAA championships, made to the Elite Eight against UConn. Playing for Tom Izzo's Sparty, was pronounced dead after a shooting in Orlando. It's a guy who befriended a young lady who was going through cancer treatments, and eventually she passed a week after the NCAA tournament. I believe her name was Lacey. The young lady's name was Lacey, and I feel bad. I can't remember her last name right off the top of my head, but he was like a champion. She loved his game. She loved how he played, and he embraced her. He went to color with her and hang out with her at the hospital. He's a really giving guy. I don't know what happened. He, you know, played about 100 so games in the NBA. Bounced around after being drafted by the Hawks, went to the Timberwolves, ended up leaving, going overseas to play, and he was finally released. And I don't know what happened, but at the age of 31, he is no longer with us. And so sometimes when I say things on the show and somebody, you know, says, oh man, that's kind of harsh, that's a hard body. You're such a refined dude. I don't know what refined means, but okay, cool. You got this education and everything else, I said, but I'm still from this one place. I'm still from that place where my young son said, Gaga, never in the history of my entire life, in the history of my entire life, to date, I've seen and done some things I'm not too proud of and done some things I'm very proud of. So I ask of you who are listening, I ask of you who are close to me, I ask of you who are friends, family, even foes, to listen in close as I relay the words of a postmodern contemporary literary giant by the name of Sean Corey Carter and ask for your forgiveness. As a matter of fact, please forgive me for my brash delivery, but I remember vividly what these streets did to me. That's the quote. But I'll add on. But also remember the people who were there to pick me up when I fell down. Who helped me to stay strong when I was weak. Who checked me when I needed correction. I love you all and I thank you all. And come back for more of this brash delivery on the other side of this. On the Open Run with Will Strickland.
Thought I had someone. but she's gone.
Back giving you more of what you asked for is The Open Run with Will Strickland, in conversation with a guy whose name rhymes with Will Strickland. What's up, Will?
Chillin', B. What up with you?
Man, you know, it is what it is. Just doing the damn thing today. Glad you were able to come on today. Yeah, man, I had to check my schedule. But, you know, I appreciate you inviting me. You know, it's one of those days, right? So let's get into it. Well, I'm with it, you know. So as we do with each and every one of our guests who comes on the podcast, if you would please, sir, run your resume. Well, I don't want to sit here breaking my arm to pat myself on the back, but I guess I can talk about some of the things I'm dealing with, some new projects that I'm dealing with through my company, One Neighborhood. Getting that together right now. It's basically an influence broker, consultancy, kind of concierge service, like what you need, we provide. Kind of like Red from Shawshank Redemption. If you ask it, more than likely he can provide it. So we're in the service industry, customer service professionals. I guess you can call it that. Doing the reboot of the hip-hop musical that I'm into called The Corner. We're calling it 2.0. Young people doing it, going to the schools. It incorporates rap, R&B, dance, reggae, spoken word, native drumming, everything to speak to students in a fun and informative way without being preachy about the topics of the day that they're concerned with, and being able to go in these schools, primarily in Canada, throughout Canada, and eventually around the world again, in different places in the world. But something we enjoy doing, you know, and looking forward to that. And also, of course, Full Court 21, the world's most unique basketball tournament, done in conjunction with my man Bang Lee, who handles all of our Pan-Asian interest. And of course, the leader, our fearless leader, Bobbito Garcia, cultural renaissance man. You know him from everything, and one of my best friends. So these are some of the things we're doing. Of course, The Open Run. That's basically it, man. Just getting ready for a new season of Full Court 21 and all these new projects coming down the line. I don't want to speak out of class, but I'm really excited. And I'm looking forward to sharing them with you all eventually, very, very soon. Well, that is dope, man. Congratulations and continued success. But let's talk about the NBA playoffs. You've been watching? I'm just going to look at you right now. Just like a rhetorical question. I've been watching, but you know what? What's funny? And I felt like this for the past couple of years. In the conference semifinals, especially games 3 and 4, depending upon, like even if it's a split or if it's 2-0 for one team or the other, going into games 3 and games 4. It always felt to me like season 2 of The Wire. You know, what people dismissed. They didn't see the importance of it. I did. So they would like, oh yeah, I didn't watch this game. I'm waiting for the Eastern Conference. I'm waiting for the Western Conference Finals, whatever. I said, but this season 2 of The Wire is just as important. Like, how do you know where they get the drugs from? They show you how. There are no poppy fields and coca leaves in the middle of Baltimore. So how do they get there? And for those unfamiliar with the second season of The Wire, it's the one where people say, oh, there's too many white people on this show. But these are the people that actually drive everything else that goes on. So you got to know how that happens. But I enjoyed it. I enjoy all 5 seasons. That's just me. I have a bias. But I don't think these games are insignificant. As a matter of fact, in the Philadelphia 76ers versus the Miami Heat series, the return of the man many people feel and believe should be the MVP, Joel Hans Embiid. Broken face and all. Team down 0-2. Comes back. They win game 3. They win game 4. They make it a series. And game 4 was really, really promising because this is where Miami had an opportunity to put a stranglehold on the series and possibly close out the Sixers, who are used to losing in the second round, in 5 games. Doing it right there in Miami in front of the people on South Beach. But James Edward Harden Jr., who says, the accounts of my demise have been temporarily exaggerated. I mean, the man had scored less than 25 in his last 11 straight playoff games. But in game 4, 31, 7-9 assists. He looked like a lot of the old James Harden. He felt empowered by having Joel Embiid in there. Who, look, he's a problem on both ends of the court. He's a question to which there are very few answers at this point. He's starting to master the ceremony, master the crowd, master his craft. Before, you can force him into a bunch of bad shots. You can force him into a bunch of bad turnovers late. Not the same. I mean, having the youthful exuberance of Tyrese Maxey to help you, the steadiness of Tobias Harris, defense from Matisse Thybulle, shooting from Georges Niang. Wouldn't it be something if Glenn Rivers got them, at the very least, to the Eastern Conference Finals. We shall see. But what about on the other side? I mean, Jimmy Butler's been consistent. Jimmy Butler is one of the leading scorers in the playoffs this year, shooting well over 50%. I think he's like 52%, 51.5% from the field, playing great defense, keeping his team. I mean, they were the number one seed for a reason. But there's championship DNA on this roster. Markieff Morris hasn't really been playing. First shot he took in game four, Joel Embiid returned that to sender. Said, get that baby out the street. And Kyle Lowry, who's been suffering from hamstring injury, given all he has, but is it going to be enough? Because you have to count on Tyler Hero and Max Strus. Yeah, I said the name. You're like, who? Max Strus, and a guy who played in the Nigerian national team for Mike Brown, the new head coach of the Sacramento Kings. I don't think Liz Cambage was talking about that squad, though. We'll get that up a little bit later. You'll see. The artist formerly known as Anthony Leon Tucker. Bam Adebayo. Idris. Doesn't help, like, when you call him by that name. They have to step up. Joel Embiid is the difference. That's it. Duncan Robinson signed a 5-year, $90 million contract at the beginning of the season out of the rotation in the playoffs. I'm sure they're going to need him at some point, or at least wish to have him, especially with a team like Milwaukee, who will give up a bunch of three-point shots. As a matter of fact, in the Boston and Milwaukee series, Milwaukee's up 2-1. They get to play again tonight. Boston has to find an answer for the fact that Drew Randle Holiday, a.k.a. I'm going to start calling him Off Night of the East. Davion Mitchell earned that name in college, but in the pros, Drew Holiday is a lockdown defender. He's limited the people who he's been guarding in this series after three games to 30% field goal shooting. That is not a typo. I did not stutter. 30%. That's not good. In baseball, 3 out of 10 is good. It's Hall of Fame good. In NBA, it's like less than Bob Cousy-esque field goal shooting numbers. That's not good. Not good at all. Drew Holiday doing his thing on the perimeter and in the interior, where the Boston Celtics barely scored 10 paint baskets in the game. 10. That sounds absurd. But most of those shots are from three. Because you can't get past Bobby Portis at 6'10". I said this last week. Past Giannis at 6'12". Past Brooke Lopez with 7'2". They're not allowing anything in the lane. They're forcing you to your non-dominant hand. So if you're right-handed, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, they're making you go to your left and then closing out on you strong. Wesley Matthews doing an excellent job chasing Jason Tatum around, forcing him into a bad game three. Consistency is what makes a superstar. I've always said, whether it's on TSN or any other program or podcast, that stars are made in the regular season, superstars are made in the postseason. Jason Tatum wants to be a superstar. You have to be consistent. A bad game is one thing. If he has a bad game four, I might have issues. I might have questions about whether Boston can beat this Milwaukee team. If they have the answers, after Mike Budenholzer and his coaching staff made the adjustments, people forget they were the top defense in the league for the past 2 years. This year they slipped a little bit, but when it counted the most, they again leaned on their championship DNA and what they knew they needed to do to win this series, and they're playing like that right now with a 2-1 lead against the Boston Celtics. Of course, in every series, there are complaints about the referee. Boston head coach Ime Udoka, got a fine. Taylor Jenkins, got a fine. Glenn Rivers, got a fine. These guys are going to get fines. They're going to take that L to make sure these guys are on their toes about some of these calls that they're thinking are being missed. NBA referees probably have the toughest job of any umpires, referees, in any of the four major sports in the world. Maybe hockey's next, but a lot of the stuff they do in hockey, you don't know the difference between a foul and high-sticking and all this other stuff. They get away with a lot of stuff. And so the NBA, I mean, you have to be crafty in the NBA to get away with some of the stuff. But a lot of it, they're calling almost to the letter for some things, and other things they totally ignore that they used to call. So I think the players, the coaches, everyone is going to say, we just want consistency. But consistency often means we want you to make more calls for our side than the other side. Which, I mean, that's not really consistency. But what is consistent? It's coming back for more of The Open Run with Will Strickland on the other side of this. See you soon. You're now listening to the sounds of The Open Run with Will Strickland, where the lecture is conducted from the mic into the speaker. In conversation
with a dude whose name rhymes with Will Strickland. Will Strickland, welcome back, sir.
Appreciate it. Been a good ride so far. Thanks for having me on. Let's talk some more playoffs.
Okay, let's rock. In the Western Conference, Dallas versus Phoenix.
There's something about the playoffs that I love. I love when coaches become sadists. And when I say sadists, they pick on people. It's easy to pick on the guy who, like a second-round pick who or undrafted guy who you don't expect much from, but you need to get them in foul trouble because they make a difference defensively for your team. So one game, the target might end up being a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith or Maxi Kleba, who helps the Dallas Mavericks immensely. Both those guys, they're important to everything that Jason Frederick Kidd does with that squad. Or, in turn, if you flipped it and said, hey, we're going to go after Jay Crowder and Cameron Johnson on the Suns, get them out of, or maybe even Mikal Bridges, get them in foul trouble, change their whole schematic defensively, and also what they do offensively by taking one of their guys out. It's basically the art of war stuff. Well, in game two, we saw the Phoenix Suns make sure to make Luka play on both ends of the court. They started hunting him in the fourth quarter. Third quarter, they let Devin Booker go at him, take all of his lunch money. In the fourth quarter, they made sure that Christopher Emmanuel Paul, just shy of his 37th birthday, was going to go at Luka and Simasauté because he's the winner all day, and they won game two in Phoenix. But then the scene shifted to the Metroplex and into Dallas. Shouts out to my man Ryan Antonio Henry, big Dallas Mavericks fan. And then Jason Kidd flipped it to scales. I mean, he knew they used to do that when he played in the league. He understands that. He understands that as a tactic. So does Monty Williams, another guy who understood that. When you think about it, 50% of the coaches left. So the final eight, four of them either played for the New York Knickerbockers, Ime Udoka, Glenn Rivers, Jason Kidd, Monty Williams, or, you want to make it deeper, 75% of them, six of the eight, either played for or work with as coaches Greg Popovich, Ime Udoka, Mike Budenholzer, Glenn Rivers, Steve Kerr, Monty Williams, Taylor Jenkins. The Popovich tree is strong in these playoffs. He's a statist too. He knew. You go after those guys. You make them weak. You hit them in whatever flank is weakest. You hit them in that. In games 3 and 4, target became CP3-7 as Christopher Emmanuel Paul was turning 37 years old in the 17th year in the league. Jason Kidd said, nothing personal, champ. We trying to get what you got, at least to the finals. So they went at Chris Paul, and Chris Paul had two of the worst games, not of this season, of his career. One game he had more, I think he had 5 points and 6 fouls. He fouled out a game, the fourth time in 139 playoff games. 7 turnovers in both games. Like, he's not playing like the Chris Paul fourth quarter killer we know, or we knew when we saw in Phoenix. What's killing them is that even though they have DeAndre Ayton on the front line, they're not great defensive rebounders. So with long three-point shots from Luka, from Dorian Finney-Smith, from Show Me the Money, Rod Tidwell, a.k.a. Jalen Brunson, Maxi Kleba, Spencer Dinwiddie, sometimes when they miss, the rebounds are long. So then there's a scramble. Who has the heart, hustle, and desire to get those rebounds? Dallas has been out-rebounding them that way. The 2021 NBA finalists, not on the ropes quite yet, but that's the great thing about games 3 and games 4 of the playoffs. The ones that people think don't matter if they're watching The Wire, like the second season of The Wire. They do matter. All the games matter. All the parts matter. All the pieces matter. Word to Lester Friedman. So game 5 is generally a pivotal game in any best of 7 game series. 82% of the teams who win game 5 go on to win the series. Game 5 is in Phoenix at the Footprint Arena, whatever they call it now. Chris Paul's going to show off that, especially after what happened with the Dallas fan who on Mother's Day is alleged to have touched, put hands in some shape, form, or fashion, not only on Chris Paul's mother, but on his wife, and his kids witnessed the whole thing, and they were in fear. Now, I don't care what you say about Chris Paul, the basketball player, and, you know, Charles Barkley's offered his manifesto about beating people up at midcourt, you know, getting that person who said whatever they said to say it right to the player's face, but he violated a person in my family. I just had this argument with my brother just recently about Pusha T and Drake. I feel like it's straight sucker sauce if you don't go directly at the person you have beef with. Apparently this fan didn't have beef with Chris Paul's wife. She wasn't playing. He didn't like what Chris Paul was doing. Okay, shout at Chris Paul. Good. Fire at your target. Fire at somebody who's going to fight back. Drake fired at Pusha T, fired at Kanye West. Pusha T fired on a man with multiple sclerosis who does not rap. A man's mother who does not rap. A man's father who does not rap. A man's baby mama, if you want to say it like that. the mother of his child, who does not rap. And then he rapped about the child, who definitely can't fight back. To me, that's sucker sauce. There's rules of engagement. This kid violated the rules of engagement. Chris Paul, people are saying, Chris Paul's trying to be tough with a 16-year-old. They always look the same. The violators look the same. They feel like they own these players. And this is getting more and more of a serious issue. We can write it off and say, oh, he's just a kid. No. A kid walked into a Charleston, South Carolina church and sat with them for an hour and prayed before he got up and opened fire on all these black people in this church. You might have heard of him. His name is Dylan Roof. He was a kid, too. I'm not trying to play scary boogeyman, but you don't know what this kid could have had. Men just attacked Dave Chappelle with a fake gun. You don't know that's fake. They stomp his ass out. I had no issues with that. But at these games, it's generally always certain players, and they always look a certain way. And the guys who are attacking them or people who are attacking them always look a certain way, too. You take that for what it's worth. But if I'm Chris Paul, it's a kid. Okay, we can go PlayStation with it. I'm known for my nomenclature, and one of my nicknames is Hands, because my friends can count on me, and I speak with my hands, and I speak with my hands. But if we want to play reindeer games like that, okay. PlayStation, let's make it happen. My hands are rated E, because they're for everybody. How do they say? Rated E for everyone. Yeah. He can get it too. I can care less. You violate my family, I'm violating you. I'm not going to get goons. I'm going to do it myself. I have to take the fine, so what? Not all fans are like this. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you should go up in the stands and do it because it's tough. Especially when you're a black athlete. But at this point, you violate my people, the value proposition changes. You're no longer a fan. You've assaulted my family. Now you're a criminal. I like to right the wrongs and be biblical like that, like I was talking about earlier. Get biblical and do unto others before they do unto me. But they've already done unto mine, so I'm going to make sure I retaliate in kind. Am I advocating for violence? Absolutely not. Am I advocating for protection? Yeah. But then when these multi-millionaire players bring whole security forces to a game they shouldn't have to bring security forces to, then they're selfish and their egos are in the way and they can't be amongst the common people and they're the same people who pay their salaries. And yeah, okay. They can't win for losing. Stay in your place, play your position, pussy, and stop touching people, period. Don't violate. Say what you want to say to Chris Paul. Leave his people alone. And that goes for any person, any fan, who's going out of pocket to talk to the families of these athletes who are not touching you or doing anything to you. And I'm not saying because I don't know what happened before all of this. The Mavericks escorted this guy out. They didn't escort Chris Paul's family out. But again, certain people need proof of something. When we say this is happening, oh, police brutality is happening in our neighborhood. Oh, you people are resisting arrest. Again. I'm using extremes for the sake of conversation, not because it was that extreme. Work with me, not against me. And I'm not tangentializing because I think a lot of this comes from fantasy basketball and this idea that you own these players, that you can control what they do. You can say what you want to say to them. Yeah, they're human too. And I mean, if you're willing to cross that line, be ready to go the whole nine yards and do it the long way because it could be a problem. At any rate, on to Memphis and Golden State. Where, I noticed some parallels last week in the program and noted that the rise of the Memphis Grizzlies looked very much like the rise of the Golden State Warriors. They built through the draft and all this. Looks exactly like got the right coach in there after Mark Jackson, who, you know, the Splash Brothers and the whole greatest shooting backcourt in the history of the game. That was all nice and was fun, but they didn't play defense. They had one guy who played defense until Andrew Bogut came over from Milwaukee. Then they got Andre Iguodala. You pair him with Draymond Green, who was emerging. Then they switched not only coaches, but an identity. It happened with the Pistons. High-scoring team, lots of fun to watch. They were in the highest-scoring game in NBA history against the Denver Nuggets back in the run-and-gun days of the early to mid-80s. Until they flipped the switch with a new coach in Chuck Daly. A new idea with the same personnel. Basically, you had Isaiah Lord Thomas III. You had Joe Dumars. Then you brought in Dennis Rodman. Bill Laimbeer's been there. Then you bring in, guys who are going to play that defense. Bill Laimbeer said, okay, I need to learn how to play defense. I can't run, I can't jump, but I can rebound and defend and be a total irritant, get people off their games. Memphis has all those elements. Golden State had those elements, but you have to play defense. Memphis does not play defense. They have one guy, they count on him. He's always in the foul trouble. Another Michigan State Spartan, Jaren Jackson Jr. Can't play if you can't stay on the court, champ. Dylan Brooks, suspended for game 3. I mean, he's on Steph Curry most of the time, but he's following a lot too. I don't think he's found his place in the rotation after last year being the, you know, the guy. Now he's back. He's been hurt all year. Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. stepped up. Is he fourth in the pecking order? He feels like Joe Johnson, I guess, and when he was in Phoenix with Sean Marion and Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. Who knows? But I see these parallels. I make the connective tissue between these things because I can see this. That's the only difference between the rise of the Warriors, the rise of the Pistons, the rise of Memphis, is they have to change their identity to a degree and actually play real possessions of defense. It has to come from their leader, too. And Demetrius Jamal Morant, you must trust, but you also must trust in his ability to play better on-ball defense because they start to target him, too. I told you these coaches are sadists. Steve Kerr knows. He's one of those guys they targeted when he played in the NBA. He knows. But you go after the stars, it's a blow to their egos. And they get out of focus. They start playing out of pocket. To this point, John Morant, who's an absolute dog, hasn't fallen out of character yet. I don't know that he will. But it's still disheartening for his teammates to see them going at Ja like that. Like, they have no respect for Ja. Because they know he's slight. They can take him in the post. They can do different things with him. It's going to be a recipe for disaster if they don't win Game 4 in Golden State. Steve Kerr said that Dillon Brooks broke the code as Gary Payton, the man with the top three-point shooting percentage in the playoffs, at 75%. That means he didn't shoot that many. Broke his elbow on a play where Dillon Brooks got a flagrant 2 for swiping at the ball, hitting Payton the second in the head. He fell to the floor, broke his elbow. Steve Kerr said, yeah, you know, there's a code that you broke. Game 3, Jordan Poole on a tough play with John Morant, reaches out to stop him from going on a fast break, pulls his knee. John Morant could be out for Game 4. Now, we know what the regular season record was without Ja in the lineup. This is not the regular season. These are not the regular Warriors. The injured Draymond Green, the injured Klay Thompson, the injured. These are the guys that are focused on doing what they do best in the playoffs. They have their band together. They got a new bandmate who has fallen in tune with him, Jordan Poole. And even though he said his play wasn't dirty, they were looking to get a suspension, I'm sure. They're working at it. Trying to make sure the referees see that. I mean, Dillon Brooks got a suspension for putting Gary Payton out. Is Jordan Poole going to get a suspension for putting Ja Morant out? I believe he plays in Game 4. That's just me, but I think that was gamesmanship. And I get it, but that's not going to win you games at all. And that's the difference. Shouts out to Jonathan Kuminga, the youngest starter in NBA history. I mean, the metrics actually said the youngest starter since they started tracking this back in the 70-71 season. But be sure that between 1946 and 1970, there are no 19-year-olds playing the NBA. So why even list that? I didn't get it, but whatever. What I also didn't get, hey, maybe I'm lying. I did get it. When on ESPN's First Take, guest host Chris Mad Dog Russo, he a longtime fixture at New York Sports Talk Radio, was talking about Draymond after he got injured, got poked in the eye, got some stitches, and he was walking to the court, and people were cheering for the injury. I think it's straight sucker sauce when people cheer for a player to get injured. Hey, look, have fun, cheer them on, but don't cheer for anybody to get injured, man. That's what you paid money to see them compete. Let them compete. And fans can say, within reason, they can say what they want to say. They can boo, like, cool, whatever. But when they're cheering on the injury, again, that man is human. So he flipped them the birds. Chris Russo is on First Take time. Just shut up and play, Draymond. What? See, there's a contract between certain things, like if players or if two black women, for instance, I'll give this as an example. It might be a poor example. I might get dragged, but here it goes. If women, I'll just say it in general, if women who are friends are hanging out and they're laughing and drinking and doing whatever they do and they're laughing, you know, dealing with each other, and they go, bitch, you must be crazy. They can get away with that. If I walk in the room and I want to join the frivolities, I can't be like, bitch, you crazy. They will drag me. People who fight so hard to say that N-word. You know the N-word I'm talking about. I'm not talking about not. You're like, but you guys say it to each other. I don't say it personally, but you guys say it to each other. Why can't I? Well, I mean, if you have to ask that question, you probably know it's wrong for you to say it. For me personally, it's wrong to say it at all. But, you know, people do it. They say it's empowering. I don't buy into it, but that's on me. That's me. It's my choice. But he said, shut up and play, Draymond. And Jonathan Clay Reddick, J.J. Reddick, it's like, hold up, man. Look, people who talk like you, they work for Fox News. people who talk like you are the guys who, you know, the fans you said were watching the NBA for 60 years, where they had the genial, quiet, head down black athlete, not the one who was fighting for his rights in that public space and to be who they want to be authentically. They don't exist now. The world as you knew it is gone. And it makes you very afraid. It's what Roe v. Wade is about, whether people believe that or not, or part of it. And that's what this was about. JJ standing up for his people. He's a part of the brotherhood, the contract that they have to protect one another. And he wasn't wrong. I get that Screaming A. Smith went on Chris Russo's program and said, it wasn't about racism. No. When you say shut up and do anything to a black athlete today in this climate, you're trying to make it seem like it's just some kind of flat thing. You're just tired of hearing Draymond. Oh, don't say anything about it. Shut up. You shut up. But it is what it is, right? JJ didn't like the undertones, so we spoke to it. These guys get paid lots of money to harass and tweet about and talk about these athletes in whatever way they want. And they generally talk about certain kinds of athletes. Case in point, Water Pistol Pete Jr., Skip Bayless, who, as of last week, and this is a number they actually put on the internet, because when it's on the internet, it's got to be true, right? That he had 49,856 tweets about the hashtag He Who Shan't Be Named. Yikes. It's bordering on obsessive, no? I didn't go and count it myself, but the fact that it was there and I saw it, I'm like, wow, that's very interesting. And then a couple of people actually confirmed it who sat around and counted this stuff. Like, how many times they count that John Morant had more tweets than he had made baskets in the series? Whatever. Metrics, analytics. Only certain ones we want to believe are real, though, right? At any rate, what is real is my early all-playoff team up to Game 4 of the second round of the NBA playoffs. Right now, these are my guys. If yours differ, let me know. You know my information. Hit me up. In the backcourt, we have two backcourt players and three frontcourt players. In the backcourt, we have Luka Lamar Doncic and Demetrius Jamal Morant. In the frontcourt, we have Jimmy Butler III, Giannis Ugo Laterance Antetokounmpo, and the Colonel's son, Joel Hans Embiid at the center. If yours differs, reach out to me. But it's not how we start, it's how we finish. And we're going to finish strong, so come back for more on The Open Run with Will Strickland. Winning time on The Open Run with Will Strickland. I want to thank that guy, Will Strickland, for coming on the podcast and spreading love. It is the Strickland way. I appreciate him for doing that. And with that being said, it's now time for the news, views, and truths that you choose on the NBA and beyond. The Southeastern Conference and the Pac-12 are going to Congress to check on how they can regulate NIL rules because they feel like it's out of control. No, really? The billions upon billions of dollars that the SEC gets, especially on the backs of football and basketball. But they want to check these kids for getting Lamborghinis at University of Texas and sponsorship deals with Lamborghini. I'm like, come on, man. You're 19 and Lamborghinis give you a car and money. And they're mad. They want to keep you forever broke. But it feels a whole lot like how they're dealing with this Roe versus Wade thing. And a lot of people think that's about pro-life. It's not about pro-life. It's about money. Plain and simple. This America's a business. You gotta know that. That's why you get a social security number. Your UPC code puts you on the shelf and scan you at Walmart, the shelf checkout aisle. Because if you keep more poor, almost unemployable, pregnant women chasing after a check week after week just to survive, just to eat, you have workers that you don't have to give benefits to or anything because you know they need the jobs. And the children will grow up in the same way. That's what they see. Every week, check to check. They're not even living, they're existing. These kids want to live. I wish that I played NCAA basketball during this time. Because I'd have figured out how to get every sponsorship and would have been barely playing. Wouldn't care. As long as I got a check. And my degree, of course. But it's the Wild Wild West. And I love the fact that the 2022 Women's NCAA Basketball Champions, the University of South Carolina Gamecocks, led by Hall of Famer Dawn Staley. I talk about Coach Dawn all the time on the podcast. She made a declaration that I found surprising yet refreshing all at the same time. She said before the season started, so that her players would not be distracted by trying to get NIL considerations and making all kinds of deals, that she said, "I will set each and every one of you up with an agent before the season starts, so that once the season starts, you don't have to worry about that. Let your agent handle that and get what you need to get." Apparently it worked, but somehow these old white guys who are the commissioners of the Pac-12 and the SEC, they see it otherwise. I get it. It's all good. What's not all good are the startling allegations against Hall of Famer Cynthia Cooper-Dyke, the last woman to win back-to-back MVP awards in the WNBA way back in 1997 and in 98, is being accused of sexually inappropriate actions and language to our team, to our staff, behavior not becoming of a head coach and definitely not a Hall of Fame head coach and a Hall of Fame player. But no one knows where the nose goes when the door's closed. Personalities come out and social media is this, and these players have said that she's been abusive to them in ways they could not imagine someone who they thought had their best interest at heart. There's a great article, a lot of great articles about this. Of course, Cynthia Cooper-Dyke has apologized and said that she didn't say those things, that they're untrue. But if she said anything that was offensive to anyone, well, I mean, if you're apologizing, you know, sad to see. But I mean, these are our heroes. And I've heard the saying that you should never meet your heroes. I don't know if these young ladies who were harassed and harangued by Cynthia Cooper-Dyke would disagree with that sentiment. Never meet your heroes. But it is what it is. A hero to many. Al Bundy, you know, he scored 4 touchdowns at Polk High one game as a quarterback there, is going to play the disgraced Donald Sterling, the former owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. So we're talking about from one disgrace to another, I suppose. And Ed O'Neill is going to play that role as Donald Sterling in this miniseries about his rise to power and how he came to acquire the Clippers and went on to get some of those fine black bodies he's noted to have commented on in the past. I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm going to check out a couple episodes. I know that Lawrence Fishburne was tapped to play Glenn Rivers in this program, but I think Jamie Foxx, who's imitated Glenn Rivers on multiple late-night talk shows, would have been a good and funny Glenn Rivers in that situation. But again, from one disgrace to another, we're going to talk about some successes. That's what we do here on the podcast. Congratulations to Mike Brown, Warriors assistant head coach and former head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, guiding them to the 2007 NBA Finals against the San Antonio Spurs, has been named the new head coach. I guess he is down with the King. Yes, the new head coach of the Sacramento Kings, Mike Brown, who will take over his duties as soon as the Warriors are out of the playoffs. Who knows when that will be? But shouts out to Mike Brown for his job. And shouts out to Tyler Hero, the sixth man of the year. Put some extra mozzarella on his pockets because he's about to get all that provolone. He said he was on par with Luka Lamar Doncic and Rafer Trae Young. As far as contracts, he should have got the 5-year, $200 million contract. He felt like he should get that, and shown and proved it by his play this regular season, playing pretty well in the playoffs. Tyler Hero is very important to what the Heat want to do if they want to move forward. So shouts out to Tyler Hero. And also shouts out to the two-time consecutive back-to-back most valuable player of the National Basketball Association, Nikola Jermaine Jokic. The past 4 MVPs have been foreign-born players. Giannis, Ugo, Terrence Antetokounmpo, and now Nikola. The global game, indeed. Shouts out to him, and congratulations on the second one. I'm pretty sure Joel Embiid is not going to take this one sitting down. As a matter of fact, he's not sitting down. He's actually playing in the playoffs with a broken face. Kudos to Joel, but also kudos to the 2021-2022 most valuable player of the NBA, Nikola Jermaine Jokic. Some injury news to report. Benjamin David Simmons is scheduled to have surgery on a herniated disc in his back. So there are a lot of people that are saying, oh, you owe him an apology. His back was really hurting. Or maybe they don't. From what they're saying, it's a minor surgery. I don't think there's any minor surgery on your back, but whatever. I think people are trying to justify their behavior around his mental health situation, whatever the case might be. You know, I might be one included. I'll take the L if I have to, but I don't care that much, so we'll find out. But hopefully you're well soon, Ben, and I think a lot of people are sitting out here caring about things they don't have to care about, watching Kevin Durant, and they're saying, oh, KD's in Greece hitting threes like he should have been hitting on the court, talking about having sex with women that are not all that attractive. I don't know what they're talking about, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You don't know what he was doing. And also, the hashtag, he who shan't be named, who rented out a private island in the Maldives for he and his family and friends. And you're like, oh, these guys, you see everything they do and you have a comment on everything they do. They can't go on vacation. They're not in the playoffs. They don't have to sit around and be miserable with you tweeting and texting about other people's lives because you, oh, that struck a nerve. Let's proceed. Shout out to Kevin Wayne Durant for being the new minority owner of Gotham FC, the National Women's Soccer League team there in New York City. So, probably has something else to cheer for, and people are sitting around being miserable about KD not being in the playoffs or the hashtag, but you're still talking about them during the playoffs. We don't want them to be the story until you make them the story. Congratulations. Let's go back to the WNBA. I'm feeling good about that. And to preview the WNBA, as we should, I mean, they deserve all the credit. As they go into their 26th season, I was really excited about the games they had scheduled this past weekend. Friday, Saturday, they were really good games. I don't care how young the Fever are. They probably are going to end up starting four rookies. Makes me think about my freshman year at Rice when we had all these freshmen on the court playing, hooping, doing our thing, living free. I feel like Indiana's going to do that. I've been talking about the Indiana Fever. Catch the Fever if you dare before they become something because, like I said, they're going to take their lumps early in the season, and they have so far. They're 0-2 right now. We're going to see them thrive and grow. I like what they have in that roster. Shouts out to Lynn Dunn. But, you know, I'm going to give some awards away. Here's our preseason awards. The Do Work Awards for the WNBA. And they go as follows. We don't have a bunch of other awards for this, so we're going to do the standard awards until we get more and more time to really delve into personalities. I think I'll do it in the postseason awards because that'll be easier to do. But I have to be mindful of being a man and talk about these women in a way that might, even if it's a joke, might be deemed as derogatory. So make sure of that. But right now, my rookie of the year from the University of Kentucky, Ryan Howard, I think she's going to be nice. She's going to have all the opportunities in Atlanta to do what she needs to do. Although Melissa Smith will also have the same opportunities in Indiana. And the Destiny Henderson, the NCAA champion point guard from the University of South Carolina Gamecocks, she's going to get her opportunities. Maybe she sneaks in there as a second-round pick and beats up on somebody. As a second-round pick who just won his second MVP in a row in the NBA. You never, ever know. Coach of the Year, Connecticut Suns, Kurt Miller. I can see that happening because I think Connecticut learned their lesson last year in the playoffs. They didn't have everyone they needed. Alyssa Thomas is going to be there, hopefully healthy, and next to Jonquil Jones, who I believe is going to repeat as the MVP. We talked about Cynthia Cooper-Dyke being the last one to do it way back in 1997 and 98. But Jonquil Jones is also going to be the Defensive Player of the Year, and that's my prediction so far. Is she going to get the double-double? Which she led the league in last year anyway. She's on the rise. She's a young lady who's playing great. She got a great team. They have a great system. I think they learned a lot from losing in the conference finals. And they're going to be back and competing for the championship once again this year. And my all WNBA team in the backcourt, Skylar Diggins, of course, from the Phoenix Mercury. Arike Ogunbowale from the Dallas Wings. Hey, she's a killer. She puts up those numbers, Jack. And my front line, Asia Wilson from the Las Vegas Aces. Shouts out to Becky Hammond for getting her first win in the WNBA. With the Aces opening weekend. Stewie, Breonna Stewart, like she could easily be the MVP as well. If you chose Breonna Stewart, if you were choosing and making your predictions for the preseason awards, and you said Breonna Stewart, I wouldn't be mad at that. You probably wouldn't care. And the other person on the front line, of course, is Jonquil Jones, but that's leaving out so many other great players, including Candace Parker, or CP3 of the WNBA, who is saying she's going to play this year as if it's her last. And normally when you say something like that, that's it. So are they going to be rallying around Candace Parker and the Chicago Sky with Emma Messerman in there to help her out and try to run it back and get a second championship and let her walk off into the sun in her TNT contract? She's great on television, great with the guys, knows her stuff, and lends great insight to basketball. This is the great exit strategy and will be a fairy tale ending for Candace Parker. Not so fairy tale. The allegations against Liz Cambage, the very outspoken basketball goddess, Liz Cambage of the Los Angeles Sparks, who looked great this year so far. It's going to be a battle in the West for sure. And she's alleged to have said some things during the Olympics, according to a former captain of the Australian Opals, I guess is the name of their nickname for their team, the Opals. Not sure what that's about. I think it's the car over there. But the Opals said that, you know, Liz Cambage said something very derogatory to the Nigerian teams, told them to go back to their third world country. Now, there's a weight around that because, you know, as a mixed race person, somebody might say, well, she's black. She can say something like that. No, you can't. It's kind of ignorant either way, no matter what color you are. But what that will do, Liz Cambage doesn't care whether she plays for them or not. At this point, she's on brand with what she's doing. She's controversial. She's out there. People see her. This is only fuel to the fire, I think, for her to move on. I mean, there'll be mudslinging online and whatever, but I don't see this really hurting her. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. But when you're telling a story, you talk about history or his story, in a place that history is normally stored, the library and where they bury the lies. Like this Karis one. Didn't he say that before Karis? Before a song before? I'm trying to recall. I used to be really good at this. I need to sharpen my sword again. At any rate, I'm talking about history and how it's documented. Make sure you control your narrative as best you possibly can. Put in the work. Oftentimes, like I feel like I'm doing right now, I'm putting in the work in the dark. I really want to share what's going on and tell you guys about what's going on, working so hard to make this happen. But I'll wait until I get it done to show you the work that I did in the dark so it can shine in the light. But while I'm doing that, I gotta live. I gotta live now. You gotta live now. Because nothing is guaranteed. None of this stuff is guaranteed. And I'm appreciative of the opportunities and the time I've had to share and do what I'm doing. But you gotta live. Word to, again, the wise sage detective Lester Freeman, who once told a co-worker, Jimmy McNulty, that no matter how many cases you bring in, no matter how great they are, eventually they all end. Things end. And you got to wake up and deal with you again. Not anybody else. No matter what you did or didn't do, you got to deal with you. You got to look yourself in the mirror. Know that you have a chance and a choice to be better and make a difference. But to quote the great Lester Freeman, when Jimmy was confused about the difference between his work and his life, and not having a separation between the two, that some things are supposed to be just for you. A life, Jimmy. You know what that is? It's the shit that happens while you're waiting for moments that never come. Bars. And I hope that I've given you enough bars on the podcast where basketball and life are one. So until next week, do remember, do what's popular with the population. Make sure you don't get beat off the dribble. And continue listening to The Open Run with Will Strickland. Rich kid, my mellow, my man, do what you do when you do it easy.